On this edition of Real Family Talk, we'll look at 5 myths about mental health and 4 things you can do to improve your outlook on life.
We'll also find out what happened when 500 grandmothers in Zimbabwe joined the fight against depression. Join us for this very important and enlightening discussion today on Real Family Talk.
A recent BBC story caught our attention. It told about how a psychiatrist in Zimbabwe solicited the help of grandmothers to combat depression. Nobody thought it would work, but this groundbreaking experiment has yielded amazing evidence-based results.
Here to tell us about it is Dr. Torben Bergeland, a psychiatrist who serves as Associate Director of Health Ministries for the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. Welcome, Torben.
Thank you.
We're delighted you're here.
Happy to be here.
So, tell us about what happened in Zimbabwe and all the stuff that you've been telling me about.
Yeah, I think this is very interesting, not just because of what happened in Zimbabwe, but the way it can be relevant in many ways for how we deal with mental issues, but also how do we think about this in our relationships. What happened is that this psychiatrist, Dixon Chibanda, he's a psychiatrist in Zimbabwe, and there are not many psychiatrists there. I think there's like 10 or 12 psychiatrists on a population of around 14 million or something. So just think about those numbers. So the availability, the accessibility.
You said 10 psychiatrists for 13 million population.
Around about that, yes. So of course they cannot deal with all the issues. Like statistics say that there, and that applies to the rest of the world also, that about 1 in 4 struggle with depression or anxiety. And then you have all the people who are traumatized, people who are suffering and struggling in different ways. And what he started thinking, well, how, what do we do? Like 10, 12 psychiatrists and this enormous population, millions of people actually who need help. So he was quite pragmatic. He said, well, what do we have available? Yes. And he realized, well, we've got some grandmothers around in the villages. What if we train them to help people, to talk with people? And that's what he did.
Yeah. So paraprofessionals.
Well, they were grandmothers. Yes, they were lay people, just trained in how to talk in a good way with people who are suffering and struggling. So this is not sort of very advanced, very sophisticated.
Very simple,
but still, like, the important is that they were trained and they knew, like, how to talk.
Okay.
Now, what's interesting about that is that he chose grandmothers, and I imagine because maybe they've had experiences themselves. But was he concerned about the stigma that might exist and their willingness to participate in this project?
I don't know sort of if it was difficult to get them on board. My impression was that it was quite easy to get them on board. And sort of the rationale behind using them was that they know the local context, they know the people, they've had similar experiences, they know what this is about.
And they're probably available.
They're available and they're
at home.
Going anywhere.
Yes.
If you train them, they will actually stay there.
Yes, that's a wonderful concept.
Yes.
I hear that it's called Kuvura Fungwa. And Kuvura Fungwa means what?
Well, I think there was like a term, local term for like opening the mind.
Okay.
That was somewhat like the approach they made, like asking questions. And that's so essential when we're dealing with mental health issues, to ask questions. As a psychotherapist myself, that's what I do most of the time. I'm not very concerned, like I don't do most of the talking. I try to ask the questions that opens the mind, the thinking, the reflection of the person.
So open-ended questions.
very much open-ended questions. Sometimes it can be more specific questions if there's something I wonder, sort of, well, is this a problem? But in general, trying to help and support the individual to think, reflect, and also to help the individual to find the solutions. I'm not the expert, and in these cases, the grandmothers also are not the sort of, they don't take on the role as the experts.
But asking people and giving them an opportunity to speak about what it is that's bothering them.
Yes, and in that way, sort of facilitating a process where the person can, for themselves, figure out, well, what are my options?
Yeah.
What may I do? What are the possible solutions? And so that's what they did. They come up with a plan and then with a follow-up. So the person who was struggling then would come back to this grandmother and talk as they went through the process of trying to work out the issues.
That's wonderful. And it says that he actually went after 10 years and studied the participants, and it looks like it was very effective.
Yes.
And even more effective than conventional treatment?
Well, what they did, this is really evidence-based. They submitted this, they did a study that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, really like a high-profile
journal.
Journal.
Yes.
What they found, that sort of the symptoms significantly dropped, suicide issues dropped. What he said, that compared, actually these grandmothers, they did better than doctors.
Really?
In helping these people with depression.
So the grandmothers who were trained to ask the right questions and to be empathic, I believe, and to demonstrate some level of interest in what was happening to the individual. Mm. And grandmothers are already that way anyway. So I find it really interesting that they chose grandmothers because they have that quality. It's innate, you know, to care and to be concerned about individuals. So they compare the grandmothers to what professionals were doing.
Well,
trained psychiatrists.
I don't know sort of the details of the study, but at least that's what he said.
The outcomes.
He presented.
Yes.
That sort of, this is not to say that doctors are bad in treating depression or anything.
Right,
But they still, like, it's amazing, like, how well they did and how much good they were able to do.
Yeah.
And in supporting people in their communities.
And we deal with that a lot in the marriage movement, where we believe strongly in marriage counseling, but we also strongly promote marriage education. Mm. And at times, we've often said to people that education can often be as
good or even better
as than counseling, than traditional psychotherapy, because we teach people skills, we teach them how to make certain decisions about their marriage and their family life.
You empower them.
So I can see why that would be successful. So it's not that we say we don't need psychiatrists or psychotherapists, but that using mentors or lay people can be very helpful. And clearly, this study shows that.
So I want to follow up with you on the fact that they tried this in Canada and the United States. Mm. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it's what they have this concept, what they call the friendship bench. It has been sort of exported.
Yes.
So, like, they've done this in New York, has been a city where they, like, the city council really have supported it, funded it. And also in Canada now, they have several places where they are doing this. And I think also in London, they've been attempts.
And are they also using grandmothers?
Well, I think that they're sometimes using grandmothers, but also others. So this isn't something that just have to be grandmothers, that they are the only ones. But I think the principles of training lay people in listening, counseling with people, that can have a tremendous impact.
Yeah. And there are actually some churches also that have tried ministries like that, where they train lay people and they go through pretty sophisticated training, I think, for several weeks and months. And they also put them in place, especially in some of these mega churches. I believe it's working.
But what's amazing about it, though, Torben, is that we are taking sophisticated concepts and breaking them down into simple processes that ordinary people can be involved in helping others.
Yes.
Well, what an amazing program. Coming up, we'll discuss 5 myths about mental health. Stay with us.
According to the World Health Organization, more than 300 million people suffer from depression globally. Depression is the world's leading cause of disability, and it contributes to 800,000 suicides per year, the majority of which occur in developing countries. Our colleague, Dr. Torben Berglund, focuses on mental health for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Today, he's here to help dispel some of the common misconceptions about mental health. So, Torben, we're going to look at some of these myths. Myth number one, if your spiritual health is okay, you won't struggle with mental health.
That's one I encounter quite often. And I don't think it's not just in our church, in faith communities in general. This sort of idea that sort of if your spiritual health is good, then sort of nothing will be wrong with your mental health, and vice versa. If you have a mental health issues, then there must be that you have some kind of spiritual issue. Okay. I think the problem is that we sort of equate the two, that we see spiritual health and mental health as the same thing. We sort of merge them together. I think it's very important that we're able to distinguish them and recognize that, well, even though you have good spiritual health, well, we live in a broken, a sinful, a world that induces a lot of mental pain at times.
Like Judas.
Yes, yes. Like Judas is one, and you have several biblical characters like this. Also, like Judas was very close to Jesus. You can question maybe sort of how was his spiritual health really, but he was one of the disciples.
Yes. But
still, his brokenness became evident eventually, and Jesus was not able to reach him and heal him. So his is a very tragic story. It's one of the very tragic stories. There are other stories in the Bible that are much more positive than his.
Right.
Let's look at myth number two. Myth number two says, if you pray and read the Bible more, that will solve all your mental health problems.
Yes. And I think there are many people who struggle mentally that have been told this in one way or another. And that's really guilt-tripping the person who has a mental health issue. It's like indicating that, well, there is a spiritual issue here. When it comes to our physical health, we know if I got cancer, well, then prayer and Bible study is not going to cure my cancer. It may help. It may help my quality of life. And we believe that there may be healing power in prayer at times also.
And you may even be healed, but ultimately you will die.
Ultimately, yes. That's also when Jesus was here on earth, also he healed a lot of people. But still, this broken world, it gets to us in the end also. And these people, even though they were healed, they got sick again. Eventually, they died.
Right. So there's another myth. Myth number three. If you struggle with a mental health issue, something must be wrong in your family.
Yeah, that's a common one, I think, and it's one of the sort of fears that people have about entering into psychology, because we think that, well, we're going to blame someone, and, well, it's the parents.
They often blame the parents, but
well, yes, but well, that is sort of one of the things that we discuss. Like we've also, as we are broken people, we also grown up in broken families, and even if the parents had done their best, sometimes it's not been good enough, and that's not to blame them. That's just the reality of that we all have needs, and I think in most cases parents do their best.
Yes.
The very best.
And they're not perfect, right?
They're not perfect. Yeah. And there is no such thing as the perfect parent.
That's right.
But still, there may be a need to work on those things. But psychology is not primarily looking for what was wrong with the family. They're looking for how can we help the individuals.
How we can help them.
Yes.
Now, I just want to, before we go on to the next point, because I think there's something that you said that's very important, and we need to separate the two, and that is that even if your parents did everything right, it's very possible that you could have a mental health issue.
Yes, because also we live in a complex world. So there are many other things that can happen, like traumas that can happen that don't happen in the family context, or other things that can happen. So definitely, even if you have, like, if you have a mental health issue, it does not mean that your family was dysfunctional.
Yeah. Yes. Let's look at myth number four. If you believe in God, there's no reason to be depressed. That's a myth. You should be happy because you know Jesus.
Yes. And I think there's, of course, knowing Jesus, there can be a lot of comfort, relief, there can be help, support in that. But if you look at the many of the great spiritual heroes the world have seen.
Peter.
Jeremiah. Peter,
yes, and also in more modern context, even in our church context, Ellen White, several of the pioneers that were struggling with mental health issues, they were committed Christians, committed Adventists. They had a connection with God. But again, sort of, this is a difficult world to live in.
And so we live in a broken world, and that impacts on the individual.
And however much sort of we are saved or believe in God, we cannot escape that reality that this world is broken.
Myth number 5, Jesus healed people of diseases, including mental health issues. Once you have Jesus in your life, you shouldn't have any mental health issues.
Yes. And that's, again, one of these sort of myths that we have when it comes to the mental area, dimension of life, that we don't apply to the physical dimension. We understand that this doesn't make sense when it comes to the physical dimension of life, that we don't think that we will never be sick, physically sick, if we have Jesus in our life.
Right.
But that the same applies when it comes to the mental dimension of life.
Okay, so Dr. Berglund, so someone is listening to this and they're saying, well, so then if that's not the case, then why do I need to have Jesus in my life if I'm still going to be depressed? I have Jesus, I pray, I meditate, I do devotionals. And I'm still going to have mental health issues, or I could possibly have mental health issues. What do you say to someone like that?
Well, I believe that the relationship with God has value in itself. It's not just a way to escape the hardships of life, but being in the relationship, as in all kinds of relationships, we're not in relationship. We should not be in relationship just for what we can gain from it. But it has value in itself. It's the essential, it's fundamental to life. We are social beings. We are created for connectedness. If we don't have connectedness with other people, with God or ourselves, we are going to suffer because of it. That's just because that's the way we're created.
So what I'm hearing you say, that the issue is much more complex than just linear. You know God, you have no pain. Know God, your mental health is fine. What I'm hearing you say is that because we live in a complex world, having God will make your life better. Having good relationships at home and with others will enhance your life, but it won't erase all the brokenness that's a part of our reality on earth.
Well, I agree with that.
So next, we're going to look at 4 ways to improve your outlook on life. We'll look at those right after the break.
Dr. Torben Berglund is spearheading a project called MindWell that is designed to promote factors that create and sustain good mental health. He says that adopting these will improve your life and your outlook. And there are 4 of them. And let's talk about them. Number 1, connect with others.
Yes, just have to say there are many more factors than just the 4, but these are some that I think are very important. And I talk about connection all the time because I think that's so important. And especially the connection we have with others in our life. If there's one thing that you can measure, I think, mental health on, it's the quality of your relationship with other people. That's it's simplifying things, but still that is so important.
Yeah, it's not really simplifying it. And we talk about the same thing in family relationships and marital relationships. And what we know is that if your relationships are not going well, they will negatively impact your mental health. So it seems like the opposite would be true, right? If we're nurturing and mentoring and massaging our relationships. I know there's a better word I'm looking for there, but,
Nurturing our relationships, having better relationship. In fact, what we do know is that people who have great marriages live longer, have better health, have a better mental outlook, and in fact, have greater life chances, get sick less often, because it creates endorphins and it builds up your body's immune system. So if you have great relationships and connections with others, it certainly does pay off great dividends.
Yes. Yep. All right. So number two, connect with yourself.
Yes, yes. I think that is another very important aspect, and sort of probably one that we think often when we talk about psychotherapy. It's like sort of looking inwards in a way, looking at your thoughts, your emotions, getting acquainted with them. Sometimes we run away from them because yes. they are painful or because they cause us some kind of discomfort. But to really sort of deal with your thoughts, deal with your emotions, understand what are they telling you and what are they telling about you, and how do you need to work with them in order for them to sort of be able to stay in mental well-being.
Yeah, that's so hard for so many people, though. And you brought out the fact that it's very painful for some people, especially if they've experienced trauma in early life or throughout life. So do you recommend that this, number two, that people seek guidance from a counselor in doing this?
Yes, I think that is very important in most cases, that you, if you have, like you have some kind of mental illness, you definitely should seek professional counseling or therapy for that. Also because it's very difficult, really, when you look inwards, it's very difficult to sort of be accurate about what you see. Often you need also the eyes of someone else, someone who can challenge you and who can also help you sort of look at the places that you don't want to look at. So you can challenge and say, well, what about this part? This doesn't quite make sense. Because when we are just in our own minds, we tend to go in the same loops.
Circular,
yes.
Tautological.
Yeah. But when you have someone else there who can be part of your circles, then they can sort of disrupt it and say, well, here you maybe need to take a different turn.
Yeah.
As human beings, we usually see ourselves in the best light, and we don't see what other people might be able to see, especially a trained eye. Mm. So again, in another segment, we mentioned the fact that many times people of faith have difficulty with the notion of finding someone to help, a professional. Mm. We can just take it to Jesus. We can just pray. And we want to say here that taking it to Jesus and praying is good and it's important and helpful.
Yes.
But God has given gifts to the church, to the body of Christ, for the edification of the church. And one of those gifts, in 1 Corinthians 12, we see it as we see a list of the gifts of the Spirit. One of those gifts is the gift of help, which is counseling, therapy. So I love that we need to get in touch with ourselves, and sometimes to get in touch with ourselves, we need the help of others.
Just let me add, they're not like seeking counsel is not in conflict in any way with also praying and seeking
Correct.
Support and help from God, or seeking help from your family network or your friends. So all these things can and ideally should work together.
Absolutely.
So they're not mutually exclusive.
Not at all.
We can do one and do the other as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, and it helps to do them all, yeah. right? Especially when we're in a situation where we are dealing with mental health issues.
Let's look at number three. Yes. Number three is connect with something greater than yourself. Connect with something greater than yourself. Exactly what do you mean by that?
Well, that's a big category.
Yes.
For many people, that can include the spiritual dimension of life, connecting with God. And I think that's also good when it comes to mental health issues. Sometimes because we like might feel bad about ourselves, it can be guilt, it can be shame, other things, and that gets in between me and God also. So to maintain that connection, to cultivate it, to take care of it, that's very important. But also the other things like that I like often to include in the spiritual dimension in a broad sense is like the meaning, the purpose of life, all these existential questions that everyone has, whether you are a believer or not. We all are faced with these existential questions
purpose.
About life. Yes, yes. And like if you have purpose, if you have meaning, your resilience, your ability to withstand the hardships of life will be better. So it's very important to reflect on those things, not run away from them, because those can also be scary. Just realizing, well, life is like, our time is limited. We're going to die. What is the purpose of everything? Sort of, if you don't deal with those questions, you're probably going to run away with them and run away from them, and possibly in destructive ways.
You know, I was thinking that as human beings, we tend to be selfish. And what I'm hearing you say through this item here is that we should transcend ourselves. In other words, help someone, even that, volunteering. You know, how can you help children to read better? Or how can you volunteer at a soup kitchen? Or how can you volunteer to help your neighbors cut their lawns or what have you? So altruism is what I'm hearing you say. You know, connecting with others, connecting with something greater than yourself is getting out of yourself, not being so inward and so selfish.
And also in that, it's been also said that, like, helping someone less fortunate than yourself,
yeah,
it can be an enormous help for yourself also.
I think absolutely. That goes. There's one more factor on ways to improve your life and outlook. Adopt a healthy lifestyle.
Yes, and we know that lifestyle is important when it comes to our physical health, but it's just as important when it comes to our mental health. To sleep properly, to rest, take time to rest, take time out, not being in this constant treadmill of things, but to exercise, to eat properly, very important.
Excellent. So we have one last text in the Bible here in 1 Peter 5:7. It says, "Give all your worries and cares to God, for He cares about you." Thank you, Torben, for joining us today. And thanks for sharing all the wonderful ideas on mental health. And thank you for watching Real Family Talk. We'll see you next time.